MX Pat Drives Ensemble with In Motion. And that is just a kind of inside joke. I'm once again in motion. I was stymied there for a while, but back in motion. And wondering, did you miss me? Did you miss me? Well, I missed you. Let me put it that way. I missed you. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. On the rebound, as they say, on the reeb, I got waylaid by whatever is going around here. And next thing you know, I was down for the count. I got out of the hospital just yesterday, and all is well. All is well. Thank you so much for your kind thoughts and wishes and even prayers. They seem to have helped. And I'm back. I'm back in the saddle again. All right. So, did I say? Yes, I did say that. I was wondering if whether I had talked about the New York Jazz, Ska Jazz Ensemble with the song or tune In Motion. Okay, so we back in good form. I still have some, you know, healing to do, but I'll do it. And I'll tell you one thing for sure. My week out was quite instructive about workers, healthcare workers, and the work that they do. And we don't see them, and we don't really talk about healthcare workers and the industry as a whole, but I tell you, it is a marvel. It is quite an operation. And there are things about it that are so comforting. Still, we have a ways to go, but I would say better than most places I have been, much better. And the seriousness with which they approach their work, their diligence, and their dedication. It's truly an example of a community reinvesting in itself, because most of the workers where I was came from the community. And there were nurses back home. There would have been, you know, people that you see every day, somebody's mom, somebody's cousin, somebody's neighbor. And that's the feeling I still had witnessing the people who go to work in our hospital systems. And they're very diligent, and they really are a reflection of the communities from which they are drawn. So I'm thankful about that. It's one of the few industries like that in the United States where we see a direct link between the people living in the community and nearby and the people who show up and do the work every single day. And they make that behemoth of a system work as precisely as possible. Of course, it's never perfect, but it is as good as you can get. And I thank them very much for their diligence and their dedication and their care. All right, so what are we talking about? Two subjects today, and I'm sure you have opinions about both. Afghanistan and Haiti. For some reason, I don't get the sense that the administration is coordinated on either of these major, major issues. And by coordinated, I mean, what is the position of this administration, the Biden administration? What message is it imparting to Americans about it? What is its intention in this tense time? What is it planning to do? And as an administration, how does it intend to respond, both in the short term and in the long term? We do know that what we've seen so far is really scatterbrained and not enough. And we do know that we don't see heavy participation by representatives of either group advising this administration on what to do. The administration itself seems a bit perplexed regarding the catastrophes in both regions as a, well, it's something that the administration should do. You rest easy. We'll call you when we need you. And that is really not a good sign from the Biden administration, that essentially they have enough time, they've got the intellectual will to do it, they have the wherewithal to carry out any number of initiatives. We just don't know what they are. And we just don't know what has accounted for this sudden buildup and this explosion of reaction that had been there for so long and been ignored for so long. It's not like the Biden administration or the administration before it or the administration before that could say there was a surprise. People who had been following this, these regions in particular, had been talking about the need for a different kind of intervention and seemed not to resonate at all with the various administrations that were in power at the time. So is there going to be some different approach? If so, what do you think it is? I mean, we passed the point of thinking something bad is going to happen. Something bad already has happened. How do you fix, take your pick, how do you fix Afghanistan, the United States relationship with it? How do you fix U.S. involvement in Haiti? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. From your perspective, what is lacking? What has been lacking? And is it fixable at this stage? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. There's where we are going today. We're training our gaze on two particularly troublesome regions of the world. As we know, in Haiti, there was an earthquake and its attendant fallout, damage, death, people dying because of things falling on them and so forth. It's not a pretty picture. Haiti seems to just be one long history of unfortunate events. And it didn't have to be, and it still doesn't have to be that. But we don't see a cogent, sensible, logical response based on the history of these kinds of events in Haiti. We don't see that. We see always a reaction to an earthquake, a reaction to a volcano erupting. But we don't see proaction, don't see a sense that nations are getting together especially those with a long history with Haiti, and basically looking at some place where they can start a totally different attitude toward asylum, and getting a proactive response and stance to the problems they know they will have. It is not news to people who have been studying the geology of Haiti and so forth that these things do happen and will happen. But we don't get a sense of deep study and recommendations about how to move forward while you protect life in Haiti. It is not the only country in the world where disaster strikes like this, you know, where you have earthquakes and you have other natural disasters. It's not the only country in the world. But it seems to be habitually the case that when it comes to Haiti, people just wait for things to happen, even though they know they will happen. And there is no cogent response. There is always a kind of ersatz response. Well, what we could do for now to patch things up, and hopefully it would last about a year or two, and until the next major disaster hits. It's as if the lives of Haitians are so expendable that the attitude of expectation that it will be so, it permeates everything. Ah, well, you know, they're accustomed to dying, and they're accustomed to earthquakes, and they're accustomed to natural disasters. So here's yet another one. We'll get over this. And so that's the approach they take. This is not, in this day and age, this is not good planning at all. With respect to Afghanistan, well, we now have yet another chapter, another era in Afghanistan having to do with people are saying, well, it's their problem now. They're the ones who affirmed authority over themselves. Okay, all that, we got that. But at the base of it still is the obligation, in fact, the duty of the world to respond in a cogent way, because that's what the world is obligated to do. You don't just say, well, they're just going through their motions, and we'll see how it all turns out. That's the general attitude. It's mind-boggling, but that's the general attitude. I let them, you know, they'll say prayers and they'll get better and we just move on. So what are your thoughts on these two regions of the world and the way the United States seems under Joe Biden to be responding? Is it an appropriate response? Is it a disappointing response? Is it a hopeful response? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. 888-874-4888. We're talking about two specific developments in two areas of the world, but within the context of the world. They're not supposed to be viewed as, well, this is them over there, and these guys are over here, and this is what they're experiencing is two separate things. No. If we are to respond at the level that we are supposed to be responding on, which is they are part of the world community of nations, there have been major problems, yes, no question about that. But they are still part of the world community of nations. And how is that world community of nations to respond? What does it call upon them to do at a moment like this? we know the context. We know it hasn't been pretty. We know that life has been very, very hard and continues to be very hard in both regions. But what do you think? What should the focus be here? What should matter to the rest of the world here? And what is the nature of the help that should go to both Haiti and Afghanistan? 888-874-4888. Some people would say, well, it's up to them. That's what happens when you're an independent nation. Whether you seize your independence violently or, you know, through regular means. The fact is, when devastation happens, well, you know, you just have to deal with it. You just have to fix it. Is that the attitude that is expected from the world community of nations? And would they be in a position now to say, we must look at the humanitarian aspect of this and give ourselves a little bit of breathing room here to react in the way that any other humane organization, be out a collective of nations of the world, and we should be responding to these two particular disasters very differently, having had special intelligence about it. We have direct experience about it. We've been involved at one level or another. Are we going to turn our backs and say, well, it's up to them. This is what they wanted. They wanted independence. This is what happens when you get it. You stand on your own two feet and you solve your problems. You solve your problems yourself. Is that the enlightened approach of new leadership? I don't know that I would accept that explanation. But I see that we do not have not even the inkling of a response as a collective, a world collective, to these two major tragedies. And I'm wondering, is the world community of nations, have they signed off on some new policy that says, look, we're tired. We're tired of coming to the aid of countries like these where there's so much violence, there's so much corruption, and we're just tired of it. So let them figure out for themselves what's their next move. Completely oblivious to the direct impact on people's lives. The people are not corrupt. Their governments might be. But this is the hard work of diplomacy. How do you involve yourself? At what level do you involve yourself? And what can you do to make a contribution where it is obviously needed, desperately needed? 888-874-4888. I understand that people, for reasons of history, recent history in particular, it doesn't matter to them one way or the other what happens. They've scratched these nations and nations like them off. We're tired, we're fed up, we tried, we failed, and we shouldn't be going back to that. You figure it out. You're on your own. Is that the attitude that the world community of nations should adopt? Or should the world community of nations really practice what it preaches? And that is that it is involved in the humanitarian rescue wherever it is needed. And they're not involved in changing anybody's politics. They're trying to simply deliver help to people whose lives increasingly depend upon it every single day. How do you reconcile that very question? Should a country that perhaps way too long for too many times has gone on the wrong side, even after it has gotten clearly gotten good help, willing help from other nations to bounce back, to land on their feet, but they don't for all kinds of internal reasons, political mayhem and whatnot. Are they to be written off? Should we be okay with that? And what should be the nature of involvement by other nations, including those nations that it perhaps, the nations that perhaps have played a direct role in causing the deterioration of these countries? How do you approach situations like this? This is crisis time. People's lives are in danger for all kinds of reasons. What is to be the approach? Do we say, oh, well, the hell with you. You figure it out. We're done. We tried. We gave it the office. We're done. You figure it out from here. Or is there an obligation, a duty, by all nations committed to this kind of work to stay the course and to find ways to help, even if some people might criticize those nations as aiding and abetting treacherous regimes that kill their own people, that cause them to suffer needlessly, that steal money that's donated for the national good? What do you say? What do you say? I'm interested in your approach to that question. 888-874-4888. I don't see anybody so far. What's going on?
Look at your Skype.
Have you opted out?
Look at your Skype.
I'm looking.
You have Patricia from New York.
Patricia from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon, Utrice. I am so thrilled to hear that you are doing well. Welcome back. Happy to hear your voice.
Thanks.
And welcome to the PRN family. Utrice, I'm going to tackle Afghanistan first, followed by Haiti. I think that, you know, as I listened to all the news reports of Afghanistan yesterday, I think the narrative that is being promoted is that, in fact, the president of Afghanistan fled. The Afghanistan army just laid down their weapons and allowed the Taliban, you know, to just walk into Kabul without any resistance at all. But I think we have to go back to the history of it. This is almost analogous to if you're in a store and you break something, the sign says if you break it, you bought it, you own it. Well, this the analogy here is that we invaded Afghanistan after 9/11 under the premise that the individuals who perpetrated that horrible act on 9/11 came from Afghanistan. Well, we now know that's not true. But the long-term consequence is that we entered Afghanistan under false pretenses. And now 20 years later, we are exiting and we are blaming the broken pieces that we have left behind as the cause for why we should now exit. You know, the United States and their collaborators have a long history that we know of. You have Iraq, you have Libya. Vietnam. They go into places where they believe that right is might, that their military force and their military arms will be quick and done. We'll go in and we'll just bomb them to smithereens and we'll do what we want to do there and then we'll get out and it'll all be over. And it'll be over in two shakes of a lamb's tail, like Bush said when with Iraq. I forget the statement where he declared that everything was well. We cannot, you know, we have to stop blaming the consequences of our poor actions, poor judgments. We keep making the same mistakes over and over and over again. We have not learned, and it is because of our belief that our firepower will conquer all. And so at this point, the Taliban is now in control. I don't know that they're any worse. They're Iran. Are we going to go into Iran and bomb Iran? Because now the people are left to the devices of a regime that we disapprove of. The Taliban is in power. And the Taliban, and I think we're going to have to leave them, leave the country, leave the people to move in the direction that they move into. And I think that's going to have to be our response. We broke it. We didn't fix it. But we're going to be left with what we left.
Thank you, Patricia, for getting us started and on such a very prescient note today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mohammed, New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice, Liz. I sincerely hope your health continues to improve. And I would just like to start out with Haiti, if I might. One country that's already helping Haiti is Venezuela. When Toussaint came in and helped liberate Haiti, they also went down and helped liberate some countries in South America, Venezuela being one. So those two countries have never forgot each other, and they continue to help each other.
So, yes, but both are in deep economic trouble. Don't forget that. It's not like when they say you help each other and so forth, that resources are unlimited, and they are not among a large group of nations that see it as their duty to do so.
That's very true, very true. But Venezuela have already started helping them, and they're having problems because the United States have embargoes on them, because when Hugo Chavez he took control of the oil companies, so they tried to overthrow him. But what little they have, they are sharing it. They already made some commitments. Now, and I'm going to say this about Haiti. Haiti has gold and oil. That's why one reason why the United States is there. If you ever want to know why they're where they are, just look at the natural resources they have. Now I'm going to go to Afghanistan. Afghanistan has the resources. The greatest resources are in the earth and in your mind. If the United States will leave them alone, they'll just put the Soviet Union out, and then the United States tried the same thing. One of the reasons being that Afghanistan was a gateway to those Central Asian republics that had a great deal of natural gases. So, you know, 9/11, we know how that went and just how that came about. They accused them of bin Laden of having, you know, bombs.
Yes, but you're giving us a historical perspective. I appreciate that. But the question is now. Now what?
Okay, now this is what. Afghanistan is a Muslim country. The Taliban was in charge before the United States came in. In that part of Asia, you have a great deal, we have many Asian Muslim countries. Muslims help each other, and they will help each other. They have the mineral wealth, they have the intellectual wealth.
That's to me, that is propaganda. Muslims help each other. Muslims do not necessarily help each other.
Well,
Muslims also live in a very capitalistic world, and they do what is best for them. There is no reason to believe that Muslims help each other. If so, why are so many Muslim countries in such distress?
Because the United States have undermined them.
Don't do that. Okay. Don't say now it's the United States' fault. Every nation has a capacity to rule itself. And you should be very clear. Many Muslim nations are out of whack.
They are, because they have been corrupted.
They are.
By Western people.
No, it's not a because. See, I'm not looking for the because of things. I want us to at least admit this is a problem. In Africa, in the Middle East, in many African nations, you have absolute mayhem. And people hide behind this idea that Muslims are more likely to be just and kind and whatnot. No, they're not. There are too many examples of Muslim-led nations that are absolutely corrupt and have been for, in fact, centuries.
Many of them are. I agree with you on that. But I'll say this, Utrice. I, being a Muslim myself, I know the principles of Islam, and I know if we live by them, we won't have as many problems. But in many cases,
you know, again, I don't want this to become a proselytizing session. You are a Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I was raised in the Catholic Church. I can't find any church organization as corrupt as a Catholic Church. How about that?
Good point.
I say this as a person, my own cousin is a pretty big guy in the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
You have to look at the facts as they are.
Okay.
I'm asking the question, what, in your view, are Muslims inclined to do to help?
I sincerely believe that my Muslim brothers will help our Muslim brothers in Afghanistan. Although we do have corruption there, but we are inclined to help each other. And I'm going to just say this, Lucretia, and I'm going to stop after this. A Muslim is just a person who submits their will to the will of God. A good Christian.
Well, that's
is
the
a
theoretical part of it. A Muslim and Catholics swear they're also to submit to the will of God. Everybody's talking about submitting to the will of God. And then you look at the translation of it, you see starvation, you see cruelty, you see deprivation of rights, you see enormous gaps between the rich and the poor. They don't have, for the most part, any logical explanation as to why we see these anomalies within the Muslim world that talks about how fair it is, how compassionate, and so forth. Just like the Catholics, just like any other religious group.
Okay, I'll say this, and let me close out. If they are doing what you just said they were doing, and most of them are, they are not Muslims. They are claiming to be something they're not. And let me let someone else get in.
It's a theoretical discussion. The fact is that that's what they're doing. It's been documented in Muslim, predominantly Muslim countries where the government is predominantly Muslim. You see this all over the world. It has not yet been debated publicly. It has not been corrected. It keeps going on. And we keep getting encouragement to look at the Muslim world as if it were different. It is not. They're crooked. They're not at all compassionate. They're not really fulfilling their mission as Muslims, even though that is their so-called reason for being, that they are more compassionate and they're more fair and so forth. And that's not true.
I agree with you on that. I'll say some, not all. Just like the Catholics, you have good Catholics.
Yeah, there are three. I know two of them.
Okay. Thank you for your time and patience.
And the
appreciate
thing
it.
Is that we hide behind religion, and when it comes to combining politics and religion, you have a toxic mix. And it is very difficult for people to be clinical and objective about what goes on in countries that are predominantly Muslim, predominantly Catholic, predominantly anything. That is a standing problem. It's not started yesterday.
Can I get one point in?
I'm sorry?
I just want to say one last thing, and I'll leave it alone. I left the United States back in the 80s, and I went back to my other home, and the Christians there treated me just as well, if not better, than some of my so-called Muslim brothers. So that goes to show that it's what you really believe in and what you really put your faith in and what you really do. Your actions tell a story. And I agree with you. Some of us, I say we are, but we're not. But I found some very good Christians, and I don't discriminate against them. Some of the men,
well, you also the men, that. My you find brother. That in every religion, in every particular belief system, you would find that. But I'm saying, let's not deceive the public into thinking that one person's belief is the belief of all people representing that religion. It's not true. Thanks for calling in and contributing today. Ali from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, you, Therese. How are you doing?
Hey, how are you?
Oh, hanging in like everybody else. I hope that you're doing well.
Well, keep hanging in.
Yeah, just hanging on my thumbs here. So, yes, and I just wanted to send, send a salute to all your listeners, all the good listeners.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I'm not sure that I'm going to be able to respond to your question, but I just wanted to ask you a question, and then I would just say something to it. You said that this Muslim, I mean, all this country, they have been corrupted for centuries, which we know that. But do you think that gives a right to the United States, and like Patricia said, we false pretend to invade a country, take infrastructure, be there for 20 years, and then just leave it without any responsibility?
So, therefore, how should we leave it if we have to leave it?
Listen, right now, and I just had to, it's like a spider web with this thing. The reason that I'm bringing that up is because I think you were talking before about responsibility. Okay, so if we are responsible and this government responsible, right now we won't have a problem that unhouse people that we have in this country. If we're talking about be responsible and attend to the needs of the world. If you go out to attend the need to somebody else's home and what the saying is, and your home is on fire, don't you think that you have to put off that fire before you go to the next home?
It's a logical thing.
And, that's logical. And like Patricia said, we went there with false pretend. So we went there to look for Bin Laden because, according, unquote, to the United States of America and the Europeans, they were the people that they came here and took the World Trade Center down, okay, and killed all these people. So we went there and we destroyed the infrastructure, we destroyed that country, okay? So and that was a false pretense. But then it turned out that we killed the guy, unquote, that we killed him in Pakistan. So if you go around and around with this problem, this is something that United States has accustomed to do. If they go to Latin America, they go to the Muslim world, they go all around the world. They destroy the country. They just turn around and I said it's just responsibility to defend yourself. Don't you think it's odd that these people, the Taliban, went into Afghanistan and there have been no fighting? It's like they just opened the gates and I say, okay, you could go in. Like you made a deal with a devil. You have always made deal with devils, so it's one more. And now we are leaving. Now we see people hanging themselves from plane and falling down to the death. And then you see, right now, I tell you this, I don't know what our responsibility is, but remember, you go to a country and like the vice president say, do not come. But you go and you destroy the country, and now all these European countries, they say, do not come. The United States said, do not come. So where did these people, they're supposed to go? So I don't know what United States could do, what we could do right now, because you're living with these people behind, all these people behind. And like I said, yes, we're going to give a passage to a few of them. But most people that they were working with, those governments, European and the American, they're gonna be left behind. And right now, we see the Taliban with new ammunition, these guns that these people have, they're brand new. Who gave it to them? So what is United States' responsibility? There is tons of responsibility that they have. But you know what? It's not going to, the things that they're supposed to do, for 20 years they didn't do. Do you think they're going to do it now that they're, unquote, they're leaving? And they're leaving everybody behind? And all these Europeans say, we don't want more brown people to come into our country? So, and I know that you have more callers, but I will have to say this about Haiti. Why is the reason that Haiti is like that? Because, again, the American, the European, they're there with the NGOs. If Haiti is so poor, how come you're there? How come you have over 400 NGOs in that little country? Now, Port-au-Prince was not touched by the earthquake, but now it's another area of the country. It's like if you go by sections to destroy that country completely. They know, we know what it has to be done in Haiti. Give them money, leave them alone. That's the European and the Americans' responsibility, to leave that country. They are warriors, and that's what everybody said about the Haitian people. If they are warriors, I know they will be able to fix their country. But no, it's just this little help here, the little help up there, and then we put a Muppet there. There has to be a Muppet. So it could just move. The American, they put their hand and the person will move. This is what it has to be done in Haiti. Leave the country alone. Give them enough money to construct their country, because they are warriors, and they will be able to do it. That's what I have to say today. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thanks so much for your contribution today. Brother David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. I've been listening to the discussion, and I think I'm trying to get right to the point. When people talk about a family of nations and the United Nations and all that sort of thing, and what I see is this. The United States doesn't want to be part of the family of nations. The United States of America wants to be the boss of all nations. And the only big adversaries would be China and Russia. But the point is, there's no idea that we just want to be part of a sovereign nation and not worry about other nations. We want to be the boss of all nations, and we have ways of doing it, like sanctions and invasions and that sort of thing. And that's what comes to my mind. The United Nations had, the U.S. had no business invading Afghanistan, Iraq, and lots of other places. And that's the way I see it. When we think about all these other nations that the United States wants to be the boss of, we think of them in terms of what the oligarchy and or the plutocrats that run this country and want to dominate the people here and do a good job of it. They want to do that in every other country to steal or get for a very low price the resources of the people and the people's who work there. So that's what this is about. Unfortunately for those who lead this country, the people at the top, the corrupt generals that run the place and all the other crooks that are at the top of the government who talk this nonsense about a democracy or representative democracy when we're really living in a plutocracy, they have lost all along the line. They lost the Korean War. They lost the Vietnam War. They lost in Iraq. They lost in Afghanistan. So it's getting tough for them, but they get more tax money from the people and put in their pockets, and they go on with this terrible situation of warfare everywhere. So what do we do about it? The only thing that people can do is to rebel.
We lost you for a minute. That's what I was trying to tell you.
Oh, yes. The only thing that people can do, what do we do about it? We go to the streets and tens of hundreds of thousands to get them to stop this nonsense that is filling the coffers of those plutocrats who rule the U.S. of A. That's what we have to do. You're not going to get anywhere by going to this false democracy we have in the government. You got to get the people out to the streets to stop invading these countries, stop warfare against all these countries with the sanctions. That's nothing but warfare. And in terms of doing things that are injurious all over the world to other people, and stop talking nonsense, free up the media, stop trying to censor people. We have to stop the censorship that's all over the place. You can't talk about certain things. So the point is that those are the things that people can do here to stop this. The time of the Iraq War, I was one of the weak people out in the streets, but there were thousands of people that went out, but not enough. So we have to redouble our efforts to put the leash on the government crooks that send our youth to be cannon fodder all over the world and to kill other people in these wars. So to me, people have to get to the point where they stop the censorship of information, which is a big problem because those who rule control the media and the schools, and go forward with more demonstrations to put the brakes on those plutocrats who rule the country.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your enlightened opinion today. Henry from Chicago, you're going to be our last talker today. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How you doing, you Trace?
I'm hanging in. They can't destroy me.
I see. I hope I'm one of those three good Catholics that you were talking about.
My cousin was a very decent Anglican kid, and he gravitated toward the Catholic Church. And, you know, we lost him. He's a big deal now.
Okay. Well, you know, the situation going on in Afghanistan and also in Haiti has very similar connections. When we're talking about imperialism and colonization, and why these countries are in the situations that they're in right now. So you look at Afghanistan and you see the instability of that country for the last, you know, four decades, maybe even longer if my history is correct. But, you know, you had the Soviets occupying that area, then the United States comes in, and then it's basically, you know, insurgents that are supported by the United States, they come in and take over, and then, you know, but this is the result of colonization and imperialism. And when you don't offer, you know, the natives of that country their own chance to build and solidify a nation, this is what happens. Same thing that goes on in Haiti. Now, Haiti was a different story because of the fact that they started off as a sovereign nation, and then they were subsequently invaded, you know, either by military or by, you know, or by other means from European countries, and destabilized them as well. So now you have a natural disaster that happens in that country, and because of the fact that their infrastructure has been so wrecked by imperialism and colonization that they can't even, you know, help themselves, and they need outside assistance, you know, from other nations. And it's so funny how, you know, you have these Christian supremacists who come out here talking about, you know, how Haiti is cursed and, you know, this is why this has happened to Haiti. But, you know, nobody says anything about Japan, who gets hit by a lot of natural disasters than probably any other country in the Pacific Islands, but nobody talks about them being cursed, you know. So it's an interesting narrative when you talk about, you know, these countries, why they're in the position that they're in, because of the fact that imperialism and colonization has really, really destroyed the infrastructures of these nations, and this is why they are in the positions that they're in right now.
Well, thank you. And thank you also for bringing our program to a close today in such a succinct way. You just put the period right where we needed it. Thank you for your call. Thank you all for your calls today. And we will get together, hold hands tomorrow again, and talk some more things that make sense. To help us understand this world that we're living in and what we need. I mean, what is the protection we need, which is, of course, knowledge, first of all. But how do we navigate this world that we're living in that changes constantly with the intention of putting us on the defensive all the time? We'll see each other tomorrow. Thank you so much for today, and we'll talk again. Bye-bye.